Right. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for staying till the end. And as I said before, I know it's tempting to go get some beers on Sunday afternoon, but you stuck with us. Ali's going to talk about writing an application kernel in Rust. And let's give the last of your Sunday energy to welcome him.
Okay, this is working, yeah? All right, hello everyone. This is Sid writing an application kernel in Rust. Again, thank you for staying until this late hour. I hope I'll make it as entertaining as for you as possible, but it's a bit of a difficult subject, so bear with me. So I'm Ali Pol. I'll tell a bit of an introduction about me, so maybe you trust me. I'm an ex-Serbo Linux developer for the past 15 years. I used to be an ex-Gentoo developer. I'm the main author of Sidebox, our topic today. I'm also an international chess trainer and the co-founder of Chess Without Boundaries, where we try to provide accessible materials to chess players with disabilities. And you can see my interest and email here. If you want to contact me, feel free to. Here is the basic outline of what we are going to do today. First, we'll define what's an application kernel. It's a bit of a vague term, so making a definition first is logical. Then I'm going to explain you how syscall interception actually works, so you'll get a more wide understanding of how application kernels work. And then it's the main meat of the matter is, of course, Rust. Why did I pick Rust? What are our memory safety patterns and the trade-offs between safety and performance? And then I'll finish talking a bit about our testing infrastructure and Q&A. So what's an application kernel? Application kernel is a really vague term. It's both an application and a kernel, but neither an application nor a kernel. So it's somewhere in between. And here is a nice description I found from an article. It's a library operating system variant that intercepts, emulates, and transforms syscall in user space for sandbox processes. These three are important. I will explain a bit more later. Interception, emulation, and transformation, right? And the way Sid does it is intercept system calls via SecComp, you notify. You notify stands for user notification. It's a new API added to SecComp in recent Linuxes. And its main difference from ptrace is you can handle system calls simultaneously from different threads, unlike ptrace, where you have to serialize. And we also use ptrace and LANlock optionally. And what Sid does is it emulates file system network and process operations. It transforms paths, flags, and credentials at runtime. And you can configure it dynamically via DevSid virtual path. I'll delve into a bit deeper later. And similar projects are Google's gVisor, which is written in Go. They are very similar. gVisor uses the SecComp trap API, and we use SecComp you notify. So the idea is in Sid, system calls are handled in different processes, but in gVisor, it's all in the single process. So depending on your use case, either one may be more secure. And ramp kernels of NetBSD fame, where you can develop your kernel as an application so you are not scared if a crash can crash the whole system. And other examples are Nabla containers, OSFI, and Mirage-OS. And there are many other examples, but these are the standing ones. And so what Sid does actually here, I tried to make it as simple as possible, but not simpler. So on the left, you see the path that an open call takes until it's implemented in Sid. And open, if you don't know, is a very basic Unix system call, which you use to open a file. And you get a file descriptor object back from the kernel with which you can use read, write, and so on. And when the sandbox process opens a file, the first thing that the Linux kernel does is send a SecComp notification to the Sid emulator thread that's handling it. There are many threads simultaneously. One of them will pick it. And this notification has the system call number and the arguments. But the arguments are not, we have to first process them to make them useful, right? We get a pointer, not a string, right? The pointer tells us where the string is located in sandbox process memory. So we need another step with process VM read V to actually read this string into our process space. And process VM read V is a bit more secure than the old way of reading with Procpit mem because it respects the address space permissions of the sandbox process. And now we have a string. The string is a path name from the perspective of the sandbox process. It can be a relative path, it can be an absolute path. So we need another step to actually turn it into a real path that we can make a sandbox check on it, right? And this step is the canonicalization. And canonicalization gives you as a return value two values back. One is an old path file descriptor, the other one is a canonical path. And the idea is both of them point to the same thing. Old path, if you don't know, is a type of file descriptor that you can only use for path operations, not for reading or writing. So the actual open hasn't happened yet, right? And then the sandbox check happens. Sandbox check can have three outcomes. It can say the path must be hidden, in which case the sandbox process will get a no such file or directory. It may be denied, in which case you'll get an operation not permitted, or it may be allowed, right? When it is allowed, now the final state happens where we actually do the open system call via this 8 item you see. We do a proc in the indirection to prevent time of check to time of use vectors here. And finally, we have a file descriptor, and we use seccomp add ft ioctl to add this file descriptor to the process space. And this is the big picture. And on the right, you can see many transformations can happen over this path. You can mask a path to change the path. It may be encrypted, and in which case the encryptor thread will take over. It may be append only, in which case we will force the append flag. As you can see, the transformations can happen safely because it all happens in SIDS process and it's safe. And finally, we can randomize the file descriptor to prevent file descriptor reuse attacks. So this is the basic idea. Don't worry if you don't get it, but we'll get to it. So why Rust? This is the main meat of the matter and why we are all here, right? I started writing Sidbox 3, which became the Rust version, around 3 years ago. And my idea was to redesign it from scratch to make it a security boundary. Sidbox 1 was written in C, and it wasn't meant to be a security boundary. So instead of doing the conventional rewrite everything in Rust, I actually took the time to redesign it from scratch in Rust. And this way we could take advantage of many Rust goodies, right? And this is what I can recommend you. Don't just blindly rewrite things in Rust. Redesign it from scratch with the powers of Rust. That makes it much better. And here are a few examples which I will dive deeper in a bit. Of course, memory safety is one of the prime features of Rust, right? And in many modules, we have this forbid unsafe code clause. So unsafe code is outright forbidden. And there are other goodies when you are working with untrusted data, like the ELF parser and the glob matcher. I'm going to delve into it in a bit. ELF is the executable file format of Unixes, and SID parses ELF to do some restrictions, and it's completely untrusted data, right? So things like forbidding arithmetic side effects, truncations, or wrapping helps that a malicious ELF file cannot crash the sandbox, right? And moreover, we use the type system for Rust in our advantage. And the main use case is we have a safe interface for Linux's MCL system called to seal a memory region so it's immutable. And I'll delve into it in a bit later. And we have this generic seal box type that turns into sealed when it's sealed. And ownership is, of course, another prime feature of Rust. And in Sidbox, we use this mostly for file descriptors, and this is fantastic because file descriptor leaks is a huge problem in container security. And in Rust, you can actually make your compiler work for you and prevent this file descriptor leaks, right? And of course, the other two are things we all know, zero-cost abstractions and fearless concurrency. As I said, seccomp can be used simultaneously, so SID is a multi-threaded process. There can be many emulator processes to handle system calls. So let's dive a bit deeper into memory safety patterns. The type state pattern, this seal box, as I said, is a interface to Linux's MCL system call. And what we do is we mark the sandbox policy as immutable when it's locked, such that a compromised SID cannot edit the sandbox anymore. And as you can see, this enum on the ninth line, there is an enum sealable, which is generic over the type T, and it has two variants, unsealed and sealed. In the default unsealed state, you can edit it as you wish, and then the one-way idempotent seal function is called, and then it turns into sealed. After that, you can only read it. You can no longer edit it anymore. So as you can see over the seal function, and this is how we do it safely in Rust. AlfParser is another example. As I said, it's it works on completely untrusted data, so we have a handful of forbid lints to forbid everything that can be a DOS attack. And I actually run the AlfParser over a set of 60,000 malwares from VirusShare, and it didn't crash. So I'm fairly confident it does the right thing. And let's talk a bit about safety and performance and what are the trade-offs. In my experience, performance is no excuse to use unsafe code, which is not really common among Rust people, as far as I can say. And here is a very good example. GLOB, if you don't know, means file name matching. If you ever written a shell and used the characters star or question mark, this is what you're using. It's a bit similar to regular expressions, but not quite. And the original GLOB matcher of SID was inherited from Arsing, and it was written exactly 40 years ago in 1986. And as a 40th birthday present to Arsing, I rewrote this algorithm in Kirk Krause's fast wild compare algorithm, which is known to be the fastest out there. And here is a nice example of the benchmarks of 2 million test cases I generated. And the wild match code has no unsafe at all. And it performs almost two and a half times faster than libc's FN match, which is C, and it has to be fast, right? But this is not the case. And another thing we use to reduce small allocations is custom path types. SID mostly works on small strings, right? And this tiny vec module allows us to store small strings in stack, and only when it overflows, it will be allocated on heap. So this cuts a lot of small allocations that SID does. And XPath is a corresponding dynamically sized type, which is pretty much similar to standard libspath, but it does comparisons with SIMD, so on recent CPUs it's much faster. Our testing infrastructure, SIDBox is a portable sandbox. It only runs on Linux, but it runs on most architectures that libseccomp supports. Some of them are here, and we have a multi-architecture pipeline that tries to test all of them. And SID is also a multi-personality sandbox, which means you can trace a 32-bit process from a 64-bit SID just fine. And again, we have cross-compile tests for that. And another nice benefit is when you're writing a kernel, everyone's test is your test, right? So on Exarbo Linux, we have package testing on by default, and everything runs under the sandbox. And if a test fails under the sandbox but passes without, it's a sandbox bug. And we also run the Linux testing projects, syscall test suite, which has over 4,000 tests, and GNU/libs POSIX compatibility tests. So we are fairly certain SID does what Linux would do, right? And the idea is to just be a thin layer. Yeah, and another thing is, of course, security. This is a security boundary, and for every sandbox escape we found in the past, we have an integration test that makes sure it doesn't reappear again. So this is pretty much all I have. Here is our GitLab. The code is GPL3 and forever free, so feel free to do whatever you want with it. We have extensive documentation in the form of manual pages. And if you have any questions you couldn't ask here, come over IRC or Matrix and ask. And finally, thanks to Friend at One More Data for sponsoring my attendance. That's all I have. I can take questions now.
Questions? Thank you very much. Sorry if I missed the point, but I wanted to ask, is there already some kind of tooling to define rules to run application under these things, like what application can access, what should be forbidden or hidden from it?
Yes, yes, yes. Exactly. Sitebox works with text-based policies, and there are over 30 categories of access rights. So you can say allow read this path or allow write, read, write, exec, and all that are all categories, and you can configure them in a text-based policy, and you can load this into Sitebox runtime. You can also configure it dynamically on the run. Like both of them are possible, yeah. Thank you for the question.
I have a small one. Okay. You are showing two clippy lints.
I'm sorry?
You are showing two clippy lints that I'm not very familiar with.
Yes.
What are those and what do they do prevent?
This one, yeah? Wait, this one.
Yes, that one.
Yes,
those two.
This one. Forbids unsafe code. That's all we know, right? Arithmetic side effects is for when you multiply two numbers, for example, and the type overflows, what's going to happen? Right? Or you are trying to multiply two numbers that won't fit into a type. All of this arithmetic that can have side effects this way, right? Wrapping or overflowing and all that. And this, and in the ELF parser, like imagine the ELF is completely untrusted. The size can be wrong, everything can be wrong. You have to work with this untrusted data, and this helps with all that, right? To not overcome the boundaries. Right? I can explain like that, yeah. And there are many more forbid clauses. You can feel free to take a look at the code. I have comments there. Yeah. Thank you for the question. We have one there.
Just one small one. Why you add those protection for arithmetical operation?
I'm sorry?
Why you add those protection for arithmetical operation? The library didn't provide. By out of the box, or
I didn't understand the question. Can you repeat it?
In a slide before,
the DOS protection, you mean, right?
Yeah,
yes, this one
prevention. Sorry, yeah, why you need to specify the
this basically means during parsing the ELF, it's untrusted, right? And anytime an overflow happens, it will return an error, it will not overflow or do something undefined with it or things like this.
Okay.
So you are preventing all the undefined behavior and instead you are returning an error. That's the case.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And why you choose Pink Floyd?
I'm sorry?
And why you choose Pink Floyd?
Pink Floyd, yeah. I mean, it's Sitebox, it's Sid Barrett, right? So Pink Floyd is a must, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Any more questions?
No? You good, yeah?
All right, so thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Mm-hmm.